F4.
Number 23A.
Well, this part B has many unique expressions which we will encounter and which only appear really in this part 3. I just mentioned one next to the paraclete as the comforter, as the counselor. The other very marked characteristic here is that tight oneness of being. That's why we had in the epitome on it that love unites all in one relationship within the infinite one. Isn't it something interesting that we read for many, many chapters, we go on reading 13 chapters, and that sense of that tight oneness of being doesn't come out, and then suddenly when the subject turns now to the part B, that this oneness comes out again and again and again. Well, this means that thought must first be led up to that point, that we can't usually start just with that oneness if we have not made the preceding chapters or the preceding subjects our own. So that we see in the first part of the word, right, the first part of signs as the word, he was only showing how we come out from the one logos. And then in the second part, he began already to show that there is spiritual agreement between the Father and the Son, that the works that the Father does, the Son does also. And we had some kind of spiritual agreement being shown. But it's still as if it would be two things that agree together. But now they are coming right together into one thing, so that there are no more two things that are in coincidence or in agreement. And here you have, I just read quickly without that you have to take notes, we come to the various verses afterwards, just to get it into your ears, what the subject of B is now, so that he would show, I am in the Father. You see, now he is in the Father, and the Father in me. Can you see a very close oneness that is brought out? Believe me that I am in the Father, and the Father in me. Again, the Father that dwelleth in me, he does the work. Ye shall know that I am in my Father, and ye in me, and I in you. This is now the first touch that he also takes in not only the Father and the Son, but also Christianity, that that is all one. See, that the Father is in me, and I in you, and you in me. Or, and all mine are thine, and thine are mine. It's absolutely one. I in thee, that they also may be one in us. I in thee, the Son in the Father, so that they, Christianity, all, are also one in us. I in them, the Christ in Christianity, in them, them is Christianity, and thou in me, the Father in the Christ, that they may be made perfect in one. Can you see? Constantly this very close union that he brings out now in this part B, that there is a oneness of being. And it is interesting that when it comes to the fourth part, namely that part which then has to deal with the accusation of Jesus and the crucifixion and the resurrection of Jesus, that there is not one sentence or one reference to this oneness. Isn't that interesting? Because there he grows into the position that there is only the one. You know, not have any more the feeling the Father is one with the Son, and the Son is one with all, and all are one with themselves, and they are all one with the Christ, and therefore they are all one with the Father. This is typical Christianity, which we will encounter here. This is no more shown in the fourth part. There it is just one, the one principle. So these things we have to hear, you see. I always say, I don't know how many times I repeat it, because I go from one seminar to the next seminar, and afterwards I don't know what I said in one and what I said in the other. But you see, we are used to read a text. But when we are learning really to understand the structure of a text, then we can no more read the text. We have to hear the text. Therefore, it's so important that we can listen to the categories. Actually, the categories must be within us first, or they don't resound within ourselves. But then we begin to hear the text, not to read them. We hear the music of it. We hear the interrelationship of it. We hear the dimensionalism of it. We hear the music of a symphony, and are no more reading along a linear line. This is what I would like to culture, you see. And only those who have had that tonality of the three categories within themselves, the tonality, not just the knowing of it. Just know, yes, there are three categories, and the first category and this, and the second category is that, and the third that. But when the tonality of these categories are cultured within our consciousness, then there's a sounding board within us, so that if the text is written with inspiration from revelation and not from the human mind, then it is a text that has that symphony in it, that spiritual symphony in it, and then we hear it. That's why John so often says, yes, you don't hear the Father speak, because you don't hear his voice. I hear him. See, he didn't say, I read him, and you don't read him. You hear him. That's why it's so important to see that the Word must lead to the Christ Spirit, so that it's music that we read. It's real music where you hear tone and tone, and the interchange of tones and the combination of tones, the categories of the tones, you see. So that you hear the, what I would say, the main thing in it, you see. I don't know anything about music, and yet I always speak about music, funnily enough. One shouldn't speak about something which one doesn't understand. And yet somehow I feel music is a wonderful symbol to show the structure of a spiritual text. Yes, so that one sees where the accent lies, what is supporting the accent of the music, what is helping to bring out the main tone. You know, as a boy, when I went to a concert, I was only intrigued about the triangle. That was very intriguing. Huh? That's how most people read the textbooks. They only hear the triangles. They only hear that little thing in which they are quite personally interested. If they have a personal problem of some kind, they read the whole textbook through to find one sentence that somehow fits into that problem. So, like me, I wonder when he's going to play that triangle. I was thrilled about it. Okay, so let's see if we hear really the whole symphony about this part B, and perhaps we are introduced into it if we take page 28, where we have a summary of the epitomes, page 28, for a moment, because it's easier to read. Page 28. There in the lower part you have B, love and mind from the standpoint of love. And we have already read that epitome, where we have seen that in the science of, as Christianity, the perfect idea of love See, that's love and mind, which is the tone for both parts, for part A and B. But now comes B, where the perfect idea of love unites. Can you see? Because I said the unity, the oneness comes out so strongly in this part B, where love unites through love all into one web of infinite relationships. You see, he builds up now a whole web of the Father, the Son, and you all being one with the Son and with the Father. It's always that relationship of the one, two, three that makes the four, the unity of it. So we within the infinite one. How is now this oneness being brought out? And we have it from four sides. One, two, three, four. The first one, Christianity, as the Word shows, first the oneness of Word, Christ, and Christianity, showing that those three sides of the holy city are actually the four sides, namely they are one. They are brought together in the four sides as the one city. So here you have oneness. Then two, Christianity as Christ. It always says abiding in the oneness with the Word and the Christ. Can you see, abiding has to do with the Christ because we are united with it, we stick to it, we are attuned to it, and it's atonement and Eucharist that comes out, that we are one with it, and that we have to abide in that oneness. It's not enough the Word, which says there is a oneness of Word, Christ, Christianity, that's not enough. The Christ says, make yourself one with it, therefore abide with it, abide with it, abide with it, remain in it. These are the terms that come up. Then comes the third side of that oneness, Christianity. In the oneness with the Word and the Christ, the world is overcome. You see, you have no more world, material world, the world of materiality. That world is overcome. The world of limitation plays no more a part in it. The world is overcome. And then you come to the fourth again, a sense of oneness, where he shows in Christianity as science, the knowledge of the one glory. So science asks always that we understand it, that we have the knowledge of it, that we don't have just a sentiment of it, a kind of nice feeling about it. So the knowledge of the one glory, namely the oneness of the Father, the Son, and all. And to everyone he gives the glory of the Father, the glory of the Son, and the glory of all. It's a one great praise of glorification that there is only one being, and that in that one being everything is brought into one, so that we have the oneness of being. It's a terrific subject, that last subject. We'll see. It's overwhelming. But the whole part B is really one great, wonderful symphony. And so let's start with the first one, Christianity as the Word. And this Christianity as the Word, which says there is a oneness of Word, Christ, and Christianity, therefore in biblical terms a oneness of Father, Son, and all, this is shown again in four little subjects. And so we have four little aspects. And we take the first little aspect of it called the Word. I have epitomized it by saying, every idea, though infinitely classified, is through the Christ one with God. Well, you know what that means? It means in our practical life that every idea, every individual idea, every individual man is always, no matter how individual he is, how individually classified he is always one with God. Can you see the oneness with the Father? So that everyone who can have that inward awareness that he says, I'm aware, though I'm absolutely individual, though I'm not like anybody else, I'm still one with the infinite one. Isn't that a wonderful foundational consciousness? If we only would have that also, you see, that we feel that though as individual that we are, we have individual jobs to do, we have individual missions to do, we are chosen for individual offices to do in this world, still it's one with God, with the infinite. Always that wonderful sense that every idea is as big as the infinite. Qualitatively, that behind every idea stands always the infinite, is one with the infinite. And not only just a little idea, you know how people say, well, I am not very significant, I'm just a little grain of sand on the beach, it doesn't really matter, the world doesn't care about me, nor God does care about me. This is all nonsense. In the infinite one, every idea is as important as the other and plays a part in the infinite one, because every idea is closed with the infinite one. So he starts right out with that sense that that he knows that people and his students didn't have that attitude, that they were constantly somehow troubled about themselves. I don't know enough about God. I'm not being taken care by God. I don't know what will happen with me, etc., etc. So he said, let not your heart be troubled. Wonderful sense. That should ring, so to say, in our ear constantly and say, let not your heart be troubled. Let not your heart be troubled. Because if we believe in God, we believe also in me, in the Christ. If the moment we believe that we are an idea of God and God has a Christ, then the Christ takes care of every situation. So don't be troubled about it. No matter how individual and how insignificant you seem to be, don't be troubled. If you believe in God, believe also in me. And then he makes that terrific statement, which really the theologians don't know what to do with it. It's always a terrific statement. He says, in my Father's house are many mansions. Don't let your heart be troubled. What has that to do? In his Father's house are many mansions. What has that to do? It has to do with, it's so logically, spiritual logic. See, that troubled heart which says, where am I? Am I in that infinite plane? I'm lost in this universe. I'm afraid in that universe. I don't find my way in that universe. And Jesus comes and says, no, don't be troubled, because in his Father's house are many mansions. Do you know what that means? I tell you it in another simile. What is it called? A needle. Take a needle. That's very small. Huh? Very small. And it can easily get lost. Yes? All right. Take that needle. It's little, it can get lost, and you can't find it. But you can arrange things so that you find it at once. Or you can arrange it so that you will never find it, that needle. If you put that needle into a haystack, you may not find it anymore. Yeah? But if you put it into a house, which has categories, you find it at once. You go home and say, I need that needle in order to put on a button or something like that. And you have a terrific big house in front of you where you live. And this is the mansion of God. In his Father's mansion, his Father's house are many mansions. So you have the Father's house. You have this big, big five-story house where you live, and you go into that big, big house, and you know exactly where that needle is. You know, I live on the second floor, so you go to the second floor, to the category definite category of the second floor. In that second floor, you know exactly that there are, say, three different apartments, and you know that you live in the apartment just on the left-hand side. So you go into the subcategory of your apartment. In that apartment, there are many rooms, another subcategory, many rooms. So you go and go into, not into the bathroom or into the kitchen, you go perhaps into the living room. In that living room are many furnitures. Again, categories, subcategories, subcategories. And in that, among those furnitures is a chest of drawers, another category, specific category. Then you know in that chest of drawers you have a lot of drawers. Huh? So you go to the third drawer because you know in the third drawer I have put my needle. Huh? And in the third drawer, you know, there are five boxes, and I know in that red box I have my needlework. Can you see what you do? In your life, you use those categories. You use the big categories, the subcategories, the sub-subcategories, the sub-sub-sub-subcategories, and finally, you know the need. You don't have to seek it. You know it because you have a structured consciousness. Is that a clear simile? Yeah? That's John, you see. That's John. He he presents to us that structure with all the categories. And it's only a question that we know the categories. Then we don't find ourselves lost. In the haystack, you find yourself lost. So anyone who studies the Christian Science textbook and the Bible and does not know the categories is absolutely lost. He's absolutely lost. He does not know where he is when he opens the textbook and reads something. He does not know where he is. He just reads a sentence or a paragraph or something like that. But he is in a haystack. And he doesn't know if he is considering the hay or if he is considering the needle. He doesn't know. So, can you see what he says? Why our heart should not be troubled? Because each one of us has a specific place within the whole structure of being, and a specific place and a specific mission, and he knows what he knows. He knows where he is. So he says, I go to prepare a place for you. I go and prepare a place for you. He is going to prepare a place for you in that house. He says, I know that each one has a specific place within all that structure of categories. I know it. So Jesus had presents here a sense that he has a structured consciousness. And so he says, I prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again. He says, I come again. This time he says always, I come again. I come again to you and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. Wonderful. Can you see what we have, what has happened over the last 40 years or 60 years? Dolly said, I'm going to prepare a house for you, a place for you. I'm going to see where I find a house that has categories, where I find a consciousness that has categories. Up to that time, the textbook had for nobody categories. It was not the house. And so he went and found the categories. He found the third story in the house and the right apartment and the right room and the right chest of drawers and the right box in the third drawers. He presented the whole structure to yourself and said, I come back to you and tell you about it. And he told us. He told us. He told us so that where I am, you can be also. That to the moment we begin to teach the science of the infinite one, not as a one, but as a structured one, then everybody can be in that one. He knows where he is. And so there you will be also. So we are there where John Dolly prepared the place. Isn't that wonderful? Shouldn't we be grateful for him? Huh? But now, after many, many decades, we can be there where he was. And it goes on, for and whither I go, ye know, and the way ye know, and the way ye know. Only Thomas didn't know where he was going. So he said, I don't know the way. So Jesus said, well, silly old ass, I am the way. Would you? See? He said, you were with me and you didn't see me, what I was doing. He didn't see the way of understanding that Jesus was going. He said, that's the way. I am the way. I am the way of understanding. So it wasn't really Jesus himself, but the Christ idea that he was seeing was the way that he was going. Mrs. Eddy says to that, no man comes unto the Father, and calls it in brackets, the divine principle of being. So nobody comes to the divine principle of being, but by me, comma, Christ, comma, what is that Christ? By me, by life, truth and love, for Christ says, I'm the way. So we can see the way is here. We know the way. The way is the categories. Going along the categories, that's the way. And as our consciousness gets the tonality of those categories, we can say, I am that way. I am that way. I incorporate those categories. And therefore, my heart doesn't need to be troubled. If ye had known me, ye should have known my Father also. And from henceforth ye know him and have seen him. Up to this point, he always said, but the world has not seen the Father. The world has not known the Father. Now he says, now you know the Father. Now you have seen him. You have seen the categories. If we see the tonality of the whole model of being, we see the Father. We can't anymore say, we have not seen God. We see God. It's symbolized in symbols that are not a human man with a beard sitting on a cloud. It's symbolized as a model, as a matrix, or as a model of being, with categories, with three categories, very simple. Nobody can anymore say, I have not seen God. I don't know God. It's there for us to take. So he that has seen me has seen the Father. This is a wonderful unity.